This is Ryan Morini with the Sam Proctor Oral History Program. Today is October 6th, 2018, and I'm sitting here with, if you want to introduce yourself.
Sol Ortega.
Yeah. So thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Could we begin with when and where you were born?
I was born in Peru, 1995, and then I moved to Florida. At least when I was like 7 years old-ish.
Okay.
Then I've been living here ever since.
Where at in Peru, if I can ask?
The capital, Lima.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any memories of Lima? Or?
Not really. I know I was of age to kind of remember some stuff, but for whatever reason, I don't really recall when I was younger. Mm-hmm. But I go back as often as I can with my parents, so they tend to... like this is what we used to do here. This is where we used to go there. So I have those memories, but nothing like from when I was younger.
Okay. So when did you start going back? Was that when you were older or?
When we got our residency, when I was about 15, 16 years old. So a while after we moved here.
Okay. So, so all your earlier memories are basically Florida then?
Yes. All okay. My earlier memories are Florida, okay. Unfortunately.
That's how these things go, I guess. But so, so what would you say about where you were growing up? Like, what do you remember?
I grew up in a community in Kissimmee, so there was a lot of diversity.
Okay.
It's a big Puerto Rican population, but you also saw a lot of different, I lived next door to a Dominican family, and then two families near us were Haitian. And then when we were all the kids used to play in the street, hang out. One of my best friends lived down the street. So it was like a lot of different types of people that I got to learn from and meet. And because my parents always worked, I grew up really close with my next door neighbor, which was Dominican. So I grew up with a lot of that culture as well.
Okay. Can I ask what your parents did?
My mom started off housekeeping. My dad he started off in the hospitality industry as well. But then moved. He is now a driver in Disney.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Which I guess a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody usually in that area will work either in the hospitality industry or in Disney. Tourism is the biggest thing kind of there. So everybody works in some kind of capacity to that.
Okay. If I can ask, did you grow up mostly speaking English in your house, or was it a mix of English and Spanish, or what?
In my house, always Spanish.
Okay.
Especially because my parents still were learning English. But everything outside of the house was mostly English, as I was learning English. But yeah.
Okay. Even in the community there, or with your friends?
Yeah, because there were so many different types of people, the common language was English. So as kids, we still speak English, but when I would go play in the house of my next door neighbor, it was always Spanish because their parents always spoke Spanish. But when we were outside playing, it was English because that was the common language between all of us.
Okay. And so what was school like for you? Just in general, I don't know.
I was in ESOL when I first started. Mm. I got out of that pretty quickly, so I was told. And school was literally down the street for me. So even though I didn't walk when I was, 8 years old to school, at some point I would start walking to school because it was very close. And then my middle school was just down the street from my elementary school. So my parents got me a bike at one point, so I would ride my bike to school because it would work a lot. So I would do a lot of after school programs to keep busy until they got home. And then high school, I just took a bus to go to high school, but I went to a technical high school. So I did first 2 years schoolwork. The last 2 years I did a certification on legal administrative assistant or something like that. Yeah.
Was that by choice or was that just the high school that in that area?
My parents were, I don't know who told my parents about that school. But my parents were pushing for me to apply to it. And a lot of my friends were also applying to it. So I'm assuming the parents talked, one parent knew about it, and then everybody kind of applied to it. For the most part, all of us kind of got in. And it was down the street from the local school, But my mom didn't want me to go to the local school because it was, she just wanted to, for me to have something just in case. Because we didn't have papers when we were, when I was growing up. So okay. She wanted to have some type of like training just in case I couldn't go to college or afford to go to college, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Did you like that school?
Yeah, I really do. Even to this day, it kind of, I think about it all the time, and it's the training that I got there. A lot of people coming in don't naturally have some of that training. When we, in my job, a lot of times when we talk about funding for different schools, I always, I'm like, hey, we should try to fund, you know, magnet schools or like hybrid schools like this, because I did that and it really opened a lot of doors for me. So, because doing that, that program the last 2 years also opened up more time for me to, I was done with school usually around 10:45. So I got the chance to do dual enrollment in my local college. So I was able to graduate with that as well. Which I don't think I probably could have had that same experience in the regular high school, but I think, I don't know. I really loved, the training that I got there. So I always try to advocate for things like that.
Okay. Now. And I don't know if you'd want to talk about this at all, but like, when did you realize what it meant to not have papers when you were growing up? Like, was there a point where you realized?
I guess I don't know if there was like a point where like, you know, the light bulb clicked and, you know, I realized I didn't have papers, but we were always doing, my parents were always doing the paperwork for things like that. We were lucky enough to be able to rent a home. So I didn't think about it like because we couldn't rent a home that we didn't have papers, but luckily, or, you know, I was able to get all of my documentation kind of exactly when I needed it. I got it about when I was 15, right before I went to college, my permanent residency, you know, waited the 3 years, got my citizenship, right? I got my citizenship right when I was graduating college, the year right before I graduated college, actually, which allowed me to apply for an internship in DC. Because one of the requirements was to be a legal citizen, a citizen. So I got the opportunity to go to DC, and that internship therefore opened up a lot of the opportunities that I now have. So it kind of just happened. It doesn't happen like that to a lot of people I know. So even though I knew I didn't have papers, somehow it worked out. I don't know why, it did, and I couldn't be more grateful for it. That opportunity.
Yeah. Understandable. How did you end up deciding to go to college? Like, was that what happened?
Well, since I was able to have my documentation, I was going to be able to have federal grants and all of that, or federal money for school. Everybody in school talked about going to college, and in my high school, my friends were all talking about applying to college. And it was just kind of like the next step, I guess. I didn't really apply to many schools. I knew that I wanted to come to the University of Florida. So I kind of applied like 3 schools. And I didn't apply to the one in my hometown because I wanted to not be there. But I didn't really know of any other opportunities outside of Florida. I just thought it was here and that was it. And UF was the best option at that time. So it just kind of, I don't know, not super exciting on that part.
No, that works.
Yeah.
So UF was, for you, it was mainly just, it was like the top school, like UF is the place to go for.
Yeah. So me and one of my friends from high school were really, well, she was really more into wanting to come to UF. And I was just like, I'm going to get into UF and that's it. And I didn't really think about anything else. I wish I would have done more research, I guess. But no, I love the school. I'm not saying anything bad about the school, but I wish I would have just done my research and looked at different options as well, because I think I narrowed my scope to like this and that was it, when I could have looked into other opportunities. I just didn't really know they were there.
Understandable. I mean, yeah. So did you have like did you know what your major was going to be when you were coming in, or did you just, it was just kind of get to UF and figure it out?
I kind of knew at some point I wanted to go to law school. So when I was younger, even though I don't think I knew, I think, so we had an immigration hearing at one point. The lawyer that we had was, did some of the paperwork wrong or something, but I was so young that I couldn't really understand the conversation between us and the immigration person and the lawyer, and my mom did not know English that well. But I just knew that there was something going wrong. We found out that he had filed some of the paperwork incorrectly, and that's it. We were going to be denied, and that was it. So at that moment, once I realized what had happened, saw how it affected my mom and how my mom and my parents were like scrambling about, you know, what are we going to do now? That's when I'm like, I want to potentially study law, you know, work with immigration, et cetera, et cetera. The only thing that I thought of was law school. I did teen court when I was younger. So I really liked that atmosphere. I thought it was fun. So when I came into UF, I'm like, political science, right? That's what lawyers do. So I got into political science. Then I took a class and I realized like, my political science might not be it. I switched to something else, switched back. I graduated with political science, but it was a lot trying to figure out what I was going to do with that major after I realized I didn't want to go to law school. So,
yeah, that understandable. It's good you were at least branching out there.
Yeah.
So what were your first impressions of Gainesville when you got here?
Oh my gosh, I hated it. I did not want to come. So that's why I say like it sucks that I kind of narrowed my scope, because when I came for preview, I didn't know what it was called until like after, you know, I started working with MCDA and all that, but it was I forgot the word for it. But it was just a lot of people that didn't look like me, didn't talk like me. I didn't know what was happening. My parents didn't know what was happening. They were wanting me to translate stuff. I didn't know what the heck was happening. So I was getting really frustrated. The day in preview started like super early, and I'm not a morning person. So I was just like not having it at all. I remember sitting, I think, at the Grand Ballroom and texting my friend, I'm not coming here. I'm going to apply to UCF because UCF has like a rolling admission. I'm going to apply to UCF. I'm going to come back to UCF. Like, I'm not staying here. I'm not doing this. And yeah, I really did not like coming here the first time. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. So you decided to stay. Like, what happened there? Was it?
So our previous staffer was really nice and she was great. I didn't even know she was Hispanic until I think the last day or something. But as we were walking, like I said, my parents were asking me to translate things and like, where are we going? What is this? What is that? What is that? And I got really frustrated. One time I just told them like, I don't know. And then this kid comes from behind me, a preview staffer, and answers her question in Spanish. Of course, my parents latch on to him from this point on. They don't let him go. And I'm like kind of uncomfortable, kind of like, you know, like embarrassed, like, oh, how are my parents doing that? But like, they won't leave this kid alone. So he answers all these questions. At one point, we're walking to another session. He tells me, and I'm like, I told him, I'm like, I don't think I want to come here. Like, it doesn't feel great. Like, I don't see a lot of Hispanic people here. Like, it's weird. And he's like, no, like, there's, at that point, like, there's 16% of the UF is Hispanic. And there's, you know, different organizations that cater to Hispanic students. And then he was, preview telling me what's in UF. But thanks to him, I always think back on that, and I always tell him that because he's now one of my good friends, mentor. He was my roommate last year, so kind of worked out long term. He really changed my mindset. I don't even think he realized what he was doing, just giving me information that preview wasn't giving me. So it really made a big difference. And then he's actually the one who connected me to get the job at La Casita. My freshman year, which I didn't know what I was doing. He was like, hey, the La Casita is hiring people because you have federal org study, right? You should apply. And I was like, okay, I don't even know what this place is, but all right. So I look up I do the interview like on the phone. So I look up how to interview, like good tips about phone interviews and how you're supposed to react, like act or whatever. Apparently you're supposed to smile even if they can't see you. It makes a difference apparently. Anyway, but thanks to him, I think he changed a lot of what happened after that first impression of UF.
Very cool.
Yeah.
What year is this, by the way? Sorry, I forgot.
2013.
Okay. Yes. And so So how soon was it that you ended up at La Casita after you got here?
So I got here this summer. Mm. Ended up in La Casita in the fall. Almost right away.
Yeah.
In the summer, I had a job with the residence hall IT people. I didn't know anything about IT, but I needed a job, so I'm like, okay. And then when my friend Jose told me about it, about La Casita, and I was like, yeah, I want to hang out with Hispanics, because I'm like, I was in Lakeside, and like, I had my own room, so I was still, I feel like, even more like, I don't know anything, I don't know anybody. So I interviewed on the phone, like I said, with the old director, and he hired me on. But when I started, it was a completely new director because they had just transitioned. So he was, I guess, just hiring the last batch before he left. And then he was gone. I actually didn't even meet him until, I think at the end of that year, we might have had an event, or 2 years after that, the director came by. He was hanging out, and everyone's like, oh, that's a director. I'm like, oh my God, he hired me. Thank you. But yeah. So I didn't even really get to meet him right away. I just talked to him on the phone one time, and that was that.
And so I'm guessing that's Eric Castillo?
Yes, Eric Castillo.
And then it goes to Olivia.
Olivia, okay. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So you never really interacted with him until you were already in the...
No.
Other than the interview.
But yeah, other than... No. I think La Casita... I don't know if it was closed or I didn't go. In the summer, they have different schedules because it's less people on campus. They just cut down the schedule, you know, a lot. So, but I obviously didn't know that until I started working there. So I'm not sure why I didn't stop by right away in the summer. But I remember always going back home anyway. So I don't know why I didn't go beforehand, but yeah.
I mean, there was a lot to take in. Yeah.
No, yeah. It's, and it was, you know, the summer term was super, I think I came summer B. So it was only a couple of weeks that I didn't go. And then after I got the job, I kind of just lived there at that point. It just never left until I left. And then.
Well, so what was your first impression when you got to La Casita? Do you remember the first time you actually physically went there, like in the...
Not super clearly. I just remember being super nervous because it was my first job, like in college. Like I thought it was like the real job, like this is it. Like I was like uncomfortable, like trying to figure out, like, I don't know anybody in here. I don't even know how this works. And the way that La Casita's set up, it's like, you don't know, there's not one front office that you go to and check in and do, like, it's like everyone's just hanging out. So kind of just walk in and ask, like, hey, I'm here for a shift, or I'm here to meet the director. And then I don't even remember I think I did the paperwork with Ellen because Ellen was still operations director in the back office in La Casita. So I think they might have taken me to Ellen, and then I did the paperwork with her, and then she kind of told me how it works and how to sign up for shifts and all of that. And I think I did my first trainings, the first 2 hours or something, and then I left.
Okay.
I don't even remember if I left. No, I'm lying about all of this. I did all of that, but that wasn't the first time. I think when I was hired, we had to go to the retreat, the ambassador retreat. So that's where I met everybody.
Okay.
The ambassador retreat, I think that was the first time I met everybody. And then I started actually physically working in the house.
How big was the, like, how many ambassadors were there?
Oh my gosh. The ambassador retreat was all of MCDA. So, yeah, it was all of everybody. So, I don't know how many people, more than 100, plus the directors. It was a lot of fun, though. I had a great time, even though I was a little like, oh, I don't know anybody. But I had a great time because at least the ambassadors were really nice and friendly, and they wanted to talk to you and get to know you, and here's this, and here's that, and here's everything. I actually met Jocelyn Padron Racines at the retreat. And she was like, you know, I don't know if you've ever met her, we talked to her, but she's always lively and wants to talk to people and be friends with everybody. So she was telling me about student government. And I'm like, I want to get involved in that. And then she's like, yeah. Like, let me tell you, let me this, like, give, take my information, blah, blah, blah. And then from that point on, you know, she kind of helped with getting me involved on campus outside from just, you know, La Casita in general. But I met a lot of my mentors in La Casita during that retreat that I didn't think that would ever come into fruition. Like, it would become anything until it became, you know, something years later.
these things happen.
So
I mean, your first impression of La Casita was kind of like work and the nervousness of like new campus, new job, new everything. Mm-hmm. Like, when does it start to feel, because it seems like you kind of adjusted, or it felt different over time. Like, how does that happen?
I think it's because obviously we have to train to figure out how to open the house, close the house, whatever you're doing the interim. And the people who trained me were really friendly and really nice and would be inviting to, like, let's hang out. Like, even after, like, the shift was over, like, let's just hang out here and then meet more people. And then as I started meeting more people, that became my friend group. So it just became a little bit more normal just to be around. But then that semester I also pledged, so I wasn't also around that often, but the people that were involved in that organization were also from La Casita, which was a different story for, you know, like, intimidation in different aspects. But, you know, afterwards, then I just had a big group of friends, both in La Casita and outside, which sometimes merged because the worlds kind of merged together a lot. So I guess that's how it kind of went down.
No. Can I ask what you pledged?
It's the Gamma Eta sorority.
Okay.
It's a multicultural sorority.
And so what made you decide to go into that?
To be honest, student government. The vice president at the time was a Gamma Eta. And I was like, well, if she can do it, I want to do it. And it seems like that's like how the connection worked. There was another ambassador in the house as well. Her name was Anna. She was also a Gamma Eta. She was really nice and I really liked her. So I was like, okay, this seems like something I can join. But I mean, it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to join a sorority. Like I came in the summer. I had complete, like, you know, F sororities and all of this. Like, I'm going to be by myself, like all of that, right? But then when I started, you know, getting to know people, getting involved, and I'm like, I really wanted to get involved in student government. And I'm like, that's a good way in. So I did it. First, me and my roommate at that time looked into it, but she didn't go to some of the events because she had class. She was an engineer starting out, so it was very hard for her to do any, to kind of go out to these events. But I started going to them. I met people in there, so I just, you know, kind of did it by myself until I met. Kind of did it by myself through all of it until I met all my friends and then all the girls who ended up pledging and et cetera.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were pledging, you were in La Casita, and you were kind of adjusting to your major too, I guess. That's a lot in the first.
Yeah, the first 2 years were a lot. I think I should have focused more in school, but, you know, you learn from it, I guess. I don't know.
Seems like it worked out. I don't know.
Yeah. Thankfully, too, one of the girls, the ambassadors in La Casita, was the one who told me about an internship in Tallahassee at one point. So even though school was a little rocky, it kind of left at some point again for a semester. And that was weird, too, because I've never had left. I never left Kissimmee, so I can go to Gainesville. And then Gainesville and Kissimmee were my only two. Then I went to Tallahassee, and it was interesting how that worked out. But anyway, yeah, it was a lot to adjust right away.
I could imagine. Did you have any kind of network in Tallahassee, or were you just kind of on your own once you got
there? The Bob Graham Center has the Tallahassee internship program. Mm-hmm. So I went with a cohort. One of my sorority sisters actually applied for it as well. So she got accepted. So I just kind of knew her because we knew each other. They roomed us together plus two other girls who were in the program. So there was, I think, a total of 8 of us.
Okay.
And then I got to meet the rest of them while I was...
Okay, cool. I will check. Is this an issue? Or what's your overall impression of La Casita, sort of its role in your life at UF? Like, you've been kind of talking about it. But...
Oh, my God. It was literally all of my UF experience, I think. Like I said, I lived there. I was there not only with shifts. I think like the max that you did for shifts, I think it was 15 hours.
Okay.
I think sometimes you can push to 20, so I did 20. And then they started like limiting hours that you can work at La Casita. But, you know, because I was older, they try to give me as much hours as possible. At one point, they brought it down to 12. And then I think, like, my last year, it was, like, 8 because, I don't know, money or something, whatever they want to say. But, yeah, I live, like, even when I was on shift, I was hanging out on the couches, reading, pretending to study, watching TV, talking to friends, going upstairs to take a nap at the library. I never thought that I would be able to do that. At one point, I was just really tired and just took a nap up there. That was great. So a lot, it was like all my friends were there. So it was really fun and interesting. Even when nobody was there, cause there was times that, you know, it was really empty. It was still a good place to just hang out, between classes. Yeah, I would close the house, I think once a week or twice a week. So I'd be out by 9 PM, but by that time I should be going to sleep anyway. So I went back home, or I don't even know what I did after that. It's like every Wednesday at 9 PM, I remember closing with Jocelyn. I remember we had a, I'm sure you've heard of the ghost of the house.
I was actually going to ask if you were closing. Yeah,
we definitely had experience with, because there was nobody there that Wednesday. It was dark. We were closing. And then we hear something and we're like, what the heck? There's no one here. It's literally just me and Jocelyn. That's it. There's nobody else in the house. Because I think back then too, it was during my first year. So there wasn't a lot of regulations of like who needed to be in the house at any time. 2 ambassadors was fine. So we heard something and we were freaked out. It was upstairs and we had to close the house. Like we had to put down the blinds, turn off the lights. And me and Jocelyn didn't want to go do that because we're like, what the heck is up there? Like we've heard the stories, but we didn't think they were true. It was literally only me and her. So like we would run up the, like we went together, closed the blinds really quick and then ran down and then closed the blinds and just got the heck out of there because we were just freaked out. It was just such a weird feeling. I never thought, like, I never was scared like that in the house again because I don't think the hours also started changing. We couldn't, I don't think it was until 9 p.m. anymore, like regulations or whatever. But yeah, I remember that very clearly. And it was just me and Jocelyn, 9 p.m. on a Wednesday. Oh, that's Brenda.
Is that... Oh, okay. I don't know if you want to join that or... Okay. Sorry, here. We'll let them sort that out for a minute, I think. But, okay. Things going okay so far?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Just checking.
Okay.
Sorry, the cords are a little... We usually have easier recorders. It's just a box that sits, but that would be picking up everything around us.
Yeah, so it's, no worries.
The other microphone that we have?
Yeah, the Marantzes. And we can't go outside because today it's too hot. It's covered with people everywhere. Yeah, both, actually, yes. And on this campus, there are generators like everywhere. So
Yeah.
And even more because of the tailgating, so you can... Yeah.
It's a lot happening today on campus.
It is. okay. So was that how you learned it? It's La Viejita, right?
La Viejita, Yeah, La Viejita. I'm pretty sure that's what the name was.
So is that how you learned about
her?
The ghost?
No. I don't even know. We just had so many different conversations when we were at the house. It's hard to keep track of when something happened. But I think it was pretty early on when I first got there. The ambassadors, the older ambassadors, were like, this is what you do to open and close the house, blah, blah, blah. By the way, we have a La Viejita ghost that lives up there in the attic, just FYI. And I'm like, what? I'm like, all right. I think that's how it went down. Like, during training or during a shift, they're like, hey, have you heard about this? And I'm like, I don't know about that. Mind you, I was like 18 years old, so I was like, and first time in college, I was like I was super impressionable. Like, everything was just like, what? It was a lot of fun. It was like, I don't think they ever told me the story like, oh, there's a viejita, blah, blah. It's just kind of like a joke, like, haha, la viejita's here. Like, just FYI, like, don't get, it was more like to tease you than to like scare you into anything. Because even if she was there, we all had a pretty cordial relationship with her. I don't think she ever did anything crazy to anyone. But yeah, she might be really upset now that the house is broken down. I'm curious to see if there's like a weird vibe when a new building gets opened up. because maybe if she did exist, was she, did she exist on the, in the house, or did she exist just like there? I don't know. It's just, I'm interested to see what the new ambassadors are going to experience in this new high tech, whatever it may be coming up.
It could be interesting. I know one story I got, I mean, I don't usually mention other interviews, but I don't know, just for what it's worth. From the third director of La Casita, actually, she said that one time there was an administrator who was giving them a lot of trouble, and then like he parked his car, I guess like in that back area, mm-hmm. and a tree branch fell on it and, like, it, and they all believed it was La Viejita like getting back.
Yeah.
It. Yeah. Was there any ever any stuff like that where something happened and people thought she was like
doing something
involved somehow, or?
That experience that I mentioned where there was like a weird noise happening upstairs when I was by myself. One of my friends told me, one of the ambassadors said that when she went up there, she stood by the attic, where the attic slash bathroom that was up there. Cause we had to, I guess if she had to get something from storage downstairs or something, cause we kept all the stuff kind of hidden up there.
Okay. Okay.
That she like felt something like weird, kind of like just in that general area. Like she just had like a feeling of it. And I'm like, it's really weird. I've never, like, even though like I'm very cautious when I go up there at night, this wasn't at night. This was like on a regular day. And I wish I would remember if anything happened that day that could have led to like, administrator yeah. bugging us, tree branch falls. So I'm interested if something happened that day that she was just trying to like, hey, yo, like, you know, warn us or something. But yeah, I don't recall, other than those two instances, any like really bad viejita stories on my part.
Hmm.
But everybody had their own kind of experience, I think, at least once. You felt her at least once, or you something at least once happened to you if you were a regular at the house, for sure. I think it was just kind of like the law of the land at that point.
Everyone had a story.
Everybody believed in viejita, and I'm sure everybody has at least one instance where they thought viejita was trying to communicate or something. I'm pretty sure of it. Yeah.
Fair
She's
enough.
Great. I hope that she doesn't, like, the memory of whatever it was doesn't die with the house being broken down, because they're not gonna, no new students are gonna be like, oh yeah, there's a ghost in this home. It's because it's not gonna be old, it's gonna be brand new. So no one's going to think that, but it was a fun thing to, like, a common, like, secret, I guess, that all of us knew, and we would tell new visitors every single time, right? But it's sad that, I guess, a lot of people won't have that.
Well, so what do you think the role of the actual house was in terms of La Casita being what it was?
I think it definitely was a safe space or a safe place for us to kind of share ideas, share our troubles, because a lot of us were from a bunch of different cultures, and we're for the most part either first generation, you know, college students, or had immigrant parents, or it was just like shared experiences that we can go to La Casita and like talk about how we felt when we were at school, right? I know there's a lot of tears that were shed at La Casita, a lot of laughs, a lot of advice. And I can't think of any other place on campus that could have provided that for me in my 4 years. The rights, it's great and it's amazing, but it doesn't, like, it's not like I'm going to see new people, meet new people just hanging out here and talk to them about my life, aka that, and then they talk to me about their life and, you know, how UF sucks or doesn't suck, or how their family is pressuring them one way or the other, or how, you know, like, you're not going to have that in these are nice open spaces to hang out with already friends you've already made somewhere else. La Casita was a place to make new friends, share new experiences without feeling like you're going to be judged, or not that somebody, at least one person, is going to understand what you're thinking and what you're saying, because we all kind of come from, even though we come from different backgrounds, we all kind of have a similar story of how we got here and why we're here and what we're studying. And I don't think any other place, I'm trying to like think of all the places that aren't on school that I've gone to, could have done that better than La Casita. Even La Salita, although it's a great place, it's a smaller place. It's a bunch of big windows next to a bunch of other places that anybody can really walk into. And it just did, even let's say the one semester, two semesters that I was here with it, it was a great space to have in lieu that the house was closed. But it wasn't, it didn't feel the same. It wasn't the same conversations, even if you wanted to have them. It was just different. It was just different. Because like if you wanted to have a private conversation with your friend, you, like you went up to the library, closed the door, and y'all would talk about whatever you guys needed to talk to. If you wanted to have a more open conversation, you'd have it at the living room. You know, if you had like gossip to share, you'd go to the kitchen. That's usually or the hallway towards the kitchen where gossip would be exchanged. The conference room upstairs, like it was just a home. I think it was literally a home, and I can't think of anywhere else. I was involved in HSA as well. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the same. Like, the people who were involved in HSA were definitely not the people involved in La Casita. There were, like, two groups, even though we, I guess, mingled with everybody. And, you know, the HSA president, two of the HSA, Jose, the guy that I mentioned previously, he was HSA president and ambassador at La Casita, got me involved in La Casita, but at some point stopped working or volunteering at La Casita. Liana, which is another of my mentors, was HSA president. Was at La Casita, volunteered there because she felt like she needed to kind of like bridge the two groups. But it was definitely different people. Definitely different people, I think. It's weird to say because the same people would be involved in the same things, but it was definitely different people. Yeah.
It makes sense. So it really was a very unique kind of space.
That... Yeah. I was involved a lot on campus, even with, like I said, with my sorority, with all of these organizations, and nothing felt like La Casita, and nothing felt like that at all, ever on campus.
So what would UF have been like for you without it?
So sorry.
Oh, no. Please, that's what it's there for.
I don't know what UF would have been like without it. It's a scary, I think it's a scary thought to have. I think I would have met the same people. I don't think I would have gotten as close to the people that how I did in La Casita. I think, I don't know. La Casita was literally a lot of my, all of my UF experience actually, because I left right before they tore her down. Mm-hmm. And then I was never really on campus when the house wasn't there. So it's like, I can't imagine what it would have been like without it. I'm sure, you know, people adapt in generally, right? So it's not like I wouldn't have adapted at some point, but I don't know. I don't think I would have left either, but I don't think I would be thinking of UF as fondly as I do had it just been regular involvement and not Casita around.
So, I mean, not to get cute about it, but that's part of why you're here today is because of La Casita and not, yeah.
Yeah, I'm here because today was it also a MCDA ambassador reunion that Ellen was hosting. Ellen, which was the operations director, was hosting and One Love Field. And originally I was going to come for... So I was trying to figure out whether or not I was going to come because I have to pay for my flight from D.C. over here. And there was alumni weekend for the Association of Hispanic Alumni, which is all of the events that were happening over there. And I was like, oh, I don't know any of those people. They're all... I don't know any of those people. Yeah. So I'm like, I don't know if I want to spend money to go just for that. Like, that doesn't make sense. And then this whole Facebook thing started with like, I want to get the ambassadors together. Like, how I know that y'all need to plan way in advance because y'all have jobs. Like, let's think about this. And you know, now this was like months in advance. It was just an idea. Then it actually came into fruition into like a Facebook event. And I was debating with my roommate whether or not we were coming. And I'm like, well, if that's happening, then yeah, I want to come for sure. I'll come, and then I'll also go to this other event, like two birds in one stone kind of thing. But definitely. that was a heavier pull, I think, to meet older ambassadors and get to see Ellen again was more of a incentive, I think, than anything else. But I'm having fun with these events too, so it worked out.
It does. Can you describe Ellen's role in the house at all? Or?
Oh my gosh, Ellen. Ellen is so great. She was in a little office at the end, like at the back entrance, basically. She was the operations director, so she helped a lot of us figure out how to get our money, right? Federal work study, how to do our shifts. She was operations for La Casita, but she was operations for MCDA in general. So she would do the retreats. She's the one, her and her team would plan the retreats, whether it was an MCDA full retreat or help with the director plan the very specific house retreats. So great. She knew I feel like she knew everything. If you ever had a problem or a question, you'd kind of go to Ellen and she would tell you the real deal. It was kind of like no BS zone with her at all. So it was great. And with the transition of the director during that time too, Ellen was kind of like a place where you can get more, you can talk to during trying to figure out what was happening and all of that. She played a major role. So when they decided to like take her out of that space, I think at one point, we were all pissed. Like we were all upset that she had to go. Or like I think they were moving her to a different office. I don't remember what it was, but Ellen was no longer going to be working there. And then at some point she decided to leave herself or something. There was a lot of like stuff going on administratively that, we don't get told all of it. Yeah. But Ellen leaving, I was happy for her because we were all happy for her because, you needed to go. But we were all like, it's upsetting that administration that the environment kind of made you feel like you couldn't continue. I don't know if I want to use that. So yeah. Just FYI, I don't know.
Okay,
but
yeah, I understand.
It was just, it was like the start
of. Hey, how are you?
My wife is around here. Is she coming to see you?
In a little while, I think.
Ignacio Villa.
Yes, I remember. It's good to see you. Okay.
What time is she supposed to see you?
Actually, pretty soon, yeah. Okay, thank you. It's good people. I don't know if you've met him.
But. I haven't, but when we were in the little fishbowl thing, he was talking, and I'm like, this guy is kind of cool. So hopefully in the tailgate, I'll say hello and figure out who he is as a person.
Yeah, he's, well, I'll introduce you if we get
to something.
But Ellen kind of provided some of the continuity, I guess, for you, among other things. How did you learn about the history of La Casita?
Part of the training.
Okay.
Because that's how you give. So one of the things that we do, aside from just sitting in the front desk and do our homework, was to give tours of the house to people who are brand new, the first time they ever stepped in. Do you want a tour of the casita? So we would have to. So in the beginning, there was little notes or like flashcards, basically, of history, of facts about La Casita and what it was before it was La Casita. I can't remember it right now, but it was a very specific route that we would take to show people everything that the house had, as well as, sprinkle in some history about it. The biggest thing was that banner that we had in the second floor of all the student leaders who had signed it. And we had to tell the students, new students that didn't know about it. I mean, I wasn't there when that happened, right? But that it was somebody spray painted "No Spic" for president. People walk that banner saying that's not okay. We frame the banner so we tell people the house is there. So we would just tell students about the banner, what happened, and why it was important to have the space, because events like this do happen, and not everywhere might be like a place where people feel included or welcome. So it was kind of one of the biggest historical things we tell people about the house, which I guess was, so people kind of ask questions about what happened, and then if we didn't know, we'd ask another ambassador who was on shift or hanging out And they would help us with more information about what happened that time.
Did they ever talk about how the house started, or did you hear much about it? Or?
I don't remember too much. I know that it was a language center, something, you know, like what it was before, but not why it became La Casita. I know that we had a lot of help from the Institute of Black Culture and the Black community to help us even have this house because it wasn't something that was like in anybody's mind to have. But I know for sure the one thing I do remember is that we had it because that community helped us get it. But I don't remember a lot about why.
Okay, but yeah, no, it's all good. I mean, just speaking of the racism on campus, because I guess La Casita was not defaced while you were there or anything like that. But I mean, did you experience racism? Were you hearing issues of, like, what was the campus climate like, kind of? But however you'd want to answer that, it's open, yeah.
Not sure. I got involved with student government when I was freshman, sophomore. And that was as much, as much exposure as I had with with white people, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's okay to say
okay.
White people.
Okay, yeah. That was the most exposure that I had with white people was student government. Everything else, like, somehow created this bubble that I didn't want to hang out with anybody else, other than like the Hispanics on campus and when I had to for student government. I remember though, there was nothing that I felt like, let me go back.
Sure.
I remember very clearly my freshman year / sophomore year, I was talking to Jocelyn about getting involved in student government. She offered an opportunity and I remember telling her, do darker people get to do that stuff that you're mentioning? And she was like, yeah, like, if, you know, she didn't think anything, like, yeah, like, why wouldn't, blah, blah, blah. And then we kept having a conversation. And I remember thinking, like, why did I think that? Or why did I even ask that? And I think this might have been freshman year, possibly. And then me and Brenda, our first event ever that we hosted at La Casita, because we were part of the Social Justice Committee, was an event on colorism that we had at the IBC. And I think we collaborated with the IBC to have this event about colorism, because for whatever reason, I felt really strongly about it at some point, and I didn't really understand why. But other than like me feeling like weird about my skin tone at one point, I don't think anything was said like blatantly in my face. I know that one of the newer ambassadors came in one day and said that somebody in his residence hall screamed at him to speak English because he was talking to his mom on the phone in Spanish. And I think he was a freshman. Yeah, he was in a dorm. So yeah, he was a freshman before he moved out. He came into the house and told us that story. And we're like, what the heck? Like, that's not okay, blah, 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 right? It just kind of depends on the right place. Like, if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, you're going to hear something crazy. After we had one of our retreats, we get, like, literally every year, every semester, we get trained on, like, cultural diversity. We had BEAD training, which was Be Educated About Diversity. And then we had just a bunch of other different trainings. And then the good thing about the ones that were with all the ambassadors is that you learn about different cultures. One of the cultures that I didn't really know anything about was the Asian Pacific Islander group, and how I didn't even hear these. I didn't know that these terms were used against them, like fresh off the boat or anything like that. But I remember that came up, and people were talking about how they heard it when they grew up and how it's not okay for anybody to say that. And then, you know, they told us a little bit about it, and we, you know, had conversations about other things that we hear. And I was like, okay, cool. You know, I left the training like normal. I was campaigning for student government at Plaza of the Americas with this kid who was campaigning for the engineering seat, and I was campaigning for the College of Liberal Arts seat. So they put us at Plaza of the Americas. And out of nowhere, he goes and says, yeah, I gotta stand here because this is where all the fresh off the boat student, like, kids come through, and they're all engineers. And I was like, that's the first time. They didn't say it towards me. They said it. They were saying in generally, like, there was not one specific kid that walked by and they said that too, but they just said that. And I remember I kind of just looked at him like, and I just walked away. Like, I didn't even know how to react or what to say or what to do. And I just literally, I'm like, this kid is a racist. I mean, I don't know if he is. I don't know. He was probably a good kid. I don't know. He just wasn't aware, I guess. And I was just like, what the heck? Like, are you really thinking? Because, like, student government, like I said, is all white. So, like, literally all these kids running for student government. And if you know about, I'm sure you know, too, about the, like, the weird political thing that, like, the tears and, all of that. So, like, it's a bunch of white guys and white girls from sororities and fraternities that get involved in that because they want to and they have opportunities to do so without any competition from any other. Like, you get your spot because you get, you know, five spots in this college, and those are all, and you can pick from your fraternity who's going to be part of those five spots, right? So it was really frustrating to, like, hear that as I'm campaigning, you know, to want to better the school and actually want to represent these students, but you literally just call somebody, you know, fresh off the boat. Like, that's disgusting. I didn't know what to say. I remember going back to La Casita later that day, maybe, and I asked either the director, another ambassador, or Ellen. I can't even remember who I spoke to. And I was like, hey, I heard this. And I was really uncomfortable. I didn't even know what to say. I didn't know how to react to that. And I think it just brought up a conversation about, you know, you get to choose when you, like, how to choose when you want to speak up and when you don't, and what to say when you do. It just brought up an entire conversation about how to do something like that. But it was really just upsetting. I think after that year, I stopped being involved in student government because it was just crap and I just didn't care about it anymore. And I started just not caring about that and just closing myself off from that. Yeah.
So were you on campus when Jocelyn
was? I wasn't on campus when the campaign started. I was in Tallahassee that semester.
Right.
But I tried, you know, to come back as much as I could, or at least keep up with what was happening. All of my friends were busy helping her if they were here. And, you know, we had to be doing our responsibilities up in Tallahassee. But when she won, it was just like, oh my God, like, how the heck did that happen? How did they do it? I mean, there was also a lot of backstory to, like, how they did it. But, you know, like, oh my God, like, wow, like, a Latina being president and then having a diverse ticket for the first time ever that's not funneled by the, you know, the sorority fraternity stuff that happens, right? It was just like, it was crazy to think that it actually even happened. But I am so happy it did, because I think it's gonna, people coming in are gonna think that it's possible. I mean, they'll eventually find out that the way things are right now, because they went back to the way that they were, it might not actually be possible, but it could be possible if you really put your mind and heart into it and you have a lot of good, you know, coalition building, it could happen again. But, you know, like, it did. Like, they broke down that system. Maybe even for a year, for a semester, they did it. And I think it made a big difference, because it made the people on, like, the higher end of this crazy student politics stuff pay attention to us and not just count us out. So I'm not sure how that works, how it's going now. But, yeah.
You can actually ask Bianco, who was here before, because she has been involved, if you're interested. But, yeah. I don't know too much right now. But
yeah, I don't know too much right now either.
But, yeah. Okay, so, well here, I know you don't want to stay too long, and you've been pretty generous with your time, so I could go for ever with questions, but do you mind a couple more real quick?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So one, just what is La Casita? And I mean, like, what is it in terms of, like, what do you see it being? What's important about it? And so when they're rebuilding it, what needs to be there? Like, what would make it La Casita and not just a building that they put where it used to be, if that makes sense?
Oh my gosh.
I know that's big.
It's a big question. Yeah, I think one of the things that I think, just like aesthetically, I think all of us talked about the moment that they told us, hey, we're going to tear it down, was, and we're going to build it up, right? Because there was a bunch in between that. It has to feel like a home, like it has to have, like, not these modern couches that kind of are uncomfortable, but they have, it has to have patterns that, I don't even know, like, what it, it just has to feel like an open space that nobody can intrude unless, I mean, the location itself does that, so thankfully. I don't know. I just feel like I wish that I could just, the way they rebuild it looks exactly the way that it was. But I came right after they remodeled it. So 2013, they had remodeled it just a little bit before me coming in. So I never saw what the old house looked like. So what the new house looked like, we had a bunch of like hand-me-downs from other places. And it was great. Like, nothing matched. It was just what it was. Nothing matched. But everything, like, the couches were comfortable, the seat. The colors were bright, like, it made you want to be there, and it made you think about a culture that you don't see when you're walking around on campus, because everything looks so mechanical or so kind of like being in a hospital. But the casita didn't have that. It was an actual home, and it was an actual house, just like the IBC. Decorated completely different because we have two completely different cultures and what we, you know, value as the things that we want to have. But I think a lot of what La Casita is the students, is the people who get involved in La Casita. Like I said, HSA and La Casita were, for whatever reason, two different things. But the students who got involved in La Casita, for the most part, when we got there, I don't think any of us really knew why we were hanging around there. But all of us, even to this day, I think back on, like, all the ambassadors that I know are involved in some type of social justice, some type of wanting to teach other people about our culture and fight for the issues that not only we're facing in universities, but we're facing outside of the university, just as a community. I think a lot of what made La Casita was the people who were involved and the people who weren't involved. We didn't have crazy administrators that we didn't know were like in our space ever. We had one director we knew we liked, he or she, whomever maybe at that moment was always in a, it's going to be there. But at the end of the day, at least when I was around, we didn't, like, we relied on each other. We didn't rely a lot on, like, what the director or anything else was. We relied on just being there to, for, like, a common cause that I don't think I knew when I was an ambassador. That's what I was doing. That's what I was learning until I got out into the real world again. And I was like, oh, like, people don't generally know these things. And this is really weird. But yeah, I think a lot of what makes La Casita was the people who are involved in it and what we learned when we were in La Casita about the importance of all of these issues. But obviously the feel of it too. It has to look like a home. Like, that's the biggest thing. It's called La Casita. It's called the home. Like, it's called a house. Like, it has to look like a house. If it looks like this building, then it's, you know, it's futile to have to even make it. Like, just, I mean, don't, not make it, but just make it look like a, like, even La Salita doesn't look, doesn't feel like an actual living room, doesn't feel like I'm comfortable there. Like, it's the same uncomfortable, I don't,
pleather or something.
Pleather, yeah, it's weird. Yeah. Not that I'm bashing on La Salita. Sure. I think it's great. Shout out, but it does not feel like I'm, like, oh, I can just chill here, put my legs up, and no one's going to tell me nothing, you know? It's just not what it was. I don't know if that answered the question or not.
No, no, yeah. And that, I mean, do you see a relationship, like an intrinsic relationship between La Casita and social justice? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
When I first got there, Dr. Castillo... I was told, right, Dr. Christie was really big on fight the power kind of mentality. He taught students how to organize. He taught students what it meant to organize and why you should, right? The thoughts behind it. Dr. Garcia taught us that it's not always like chain yourself to a wall, right? It's, you have to think of other things that go along with it. Gabe kind of continued that same kind of teaching, like there's other ways to get what you need as a community. But it's just the fact that we're even having these conversations about how that even works without anybody stifling these thought processes, and how, because I feel like even at jobs in general, like outside of this, like you have people telling you that's not gonna work, right, all the time. But I think La Casita, with whomever was in charge, was more like they let you have these thoughts and these feelings and be angry and be happy, be whatever, and try to like do something about it, and like taught you how to do something about it, versus just be angry because you're angry, or not even learn why you think that way, why you feel that way. Like I said, like this weird thing about color when I first started, I'm like, I don't know why I thought that. And then because I had that thought, I talked to somebody, we started thinking, I'm like, why people, like, you're not the only one, right? It's not only Latinos, it's everybody who has some weird kind of colorism thing. When you see it in the media, you see it here, like, but I learned all of that in La Casita during my shifts as I was like Googling and researching for this event that I wanted to create with my social justice committee. And then I think it's just like, it breeds that type of like environment where you learn that I didn't have like in class, which is weird. Anyway, whatever. It's a different story, but yeah.
That's.
But it's not only just social justice stuff, you know, it's just, like I mentioned before, it's, the feeling of just having somebody you can share a story with, having a conversation with somebody, is just being able to be open and like full disclosure kind of place.
And you didn't find that anywhere else, the full disclosure kind of places.
Because everywhere else, at least in this university, because it's one of like the top universities, and you come in with it kind of breeds a mentality like, you have to be the best, and you have to be involved in everything, and you have to be the best in what you're involved in, plus be good in school, plus think about internships. You know, you have to do it all at the same time. And even with the student organizations, everybody's trying to figure out, how do I get involved? How do I become a director? How do I become not an assistant director, but not the director? And how do I become the president? How do, you know, like everybody wants to move up somehow in whichever way that they can. But like, he thought, like, nobody was like, the way that the ambassadorship was set up, like nobody was like, well, I'm gunning for your job. Like, we're just literally ambassadors. Like, that's all we were. Even when we had like committees, and there was a committee, like there was a person who led the committee, even that was just based on seniority. And that person never completely controlled everything that you were doing in the committee either. So it was, I don't know. That was my experience with it. I'm not sure if anybody else who talks about La Casita thinks that way about it, but yeah, definitely didn't find that anywhere else on campus. Everyone's always thinking about the next step, but La Casita was just thinking about, when are we going to make new coffee in the machine, because it's running out and it's cold, right? So, I don't know.
Well said. Yeah. And so, let me see. Yeah, so I think we've covered basically. So there are two questions I have. Sorry, is that okay?
Okay.
So one would just be, in terms of inclusivity at La Casita, I know, like the Latinx community, there are a lot of identities and there's a lot of diversity within it. Like, did you ever see any issues with inclusivity internally in terms of like, queer inclusivity or like Afro-Latinx or I don't know, whatever. But did you ever have those conversations where people didn't feel included, or was it?
I think at one point we had a conversation, like just like all of us, about these issues. And some people spoke up about moments that they didn't feel comfortable because people we might have said something or whatever. I think we had like a powwow about this at one point, because at least in the time that I was an ambassador there, people were still, I mean, even in college, like, not everybody comes in knowing exactly who you are as a person, right? Yeah. So people were figuring out who they were in the context of this. And I think we learned about LGBTQ within the Latino community. And one of those retreats, like, somebody mentioned his experience about, you know, being gay, but also being gay and Latino and what that meant to him, which was, you know, it could be a different experience than being gay and Black or being gay and Asian. But at the end of the day, it kind of shares a commonality in experiences. I don't think anybody that, I don't want to say something and then not be true,
sure,
right?
Yeah, no,
I don't think anybody felt ostracized because of the subsections within the Latino community. I think we did pretty good because there was so much diversity within the ambassadors. We did pretty good. We tried to do a pretty good job about including different types of music, or because everybody got a chance to get the iPad and change the song and change the music, right? Depending on whoever what they wanted to hear. I remember one time we just started listening to rock and roll because that's what one of our grad assistants wanted to hear, and everyone was cool with it. You know, we listened to Mexican music, we listened to cumbias, salsas, merengues, bachatas. It was never like, we're going to listen to this and that's it. You know, and even within salsa, bachata, merengue, there's a bunch of different artists that range in different countries that you don't know about, you know, like Latino pop rock. Like, just in general, I think one of the things that I liked about La Cajita was that it was a bunch of different cultures. And I think in HSA, for example, it just felt like it was one type of Latino there. And they had a bunch of, like, you know, they have the sub-organizations. And within the sub-organization, there's, I feel like everybody has their group and their sub-organizations, right? Like, the Venezuelan group always talked, for whatever reason, when I was here, I always heard them talking in Spanish and hanging out in very specific places. Like, that was their group, that was their people. Same thing with the Colombian organization, the bigger ones, the ones that had more students here. But it was very seldom when HSA was able to kind of put all of them and have everybody kind of intermingle and share about our culture, other than just, you know, like, I'm going to have a table with my food and you can come and get my food and then you move on to some other table kind of thing. So, like, they tried, I know. It wasn't any malintention of it. It's just hard to deal with, to put all these things in together. But in La Casita, it just kind of naturally happened because there was one of each at some point in the house to try to talk about these things.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know if that answered.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Okay.
No, these are great answers. So,
okay.
Yeah. As long as you feel good about it. Like.
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I already kind of asked, like, what the future of La Casita should be. Like, so I guess last thing would just be, do you have any, like, final thoughts or reflections or stories you'd want to share about La Casita?
So many. I don't know. La Casita was just a really important part in my 4 years that I was in the university. I learned so many things from so many different people, from how to own up to having people pronounce your name correctly, to, you know, somebody coming out when, you know, they hadn't come out in the however many years they were in school. They just came out, you know, their junior year, let's say, right? And figuring out how that was for that person, figuring out what it is to be Latino. What it is to love your culture aside from everything else, learning about it, because a lot of people that came into the house also were like, yeah, you know, I am X, but I don't really know a lot about X. So, and but there were people who were like super like, yeah, I'm like really, you know, Peruvian and I know everything about Peru. And some people are like, I don't know a lot about Peru. I know that I am Peruvian, or so I was told coming to university. They're like, oh, what are you? Or where are you from? So you have to, like, learn. I'm like, I'm from here, but I don't know what that means, right? So learning a lot of that, like, I knew I was Peruvian. I knew general facts about my country, but there was another Peruvian there. There was actually a couple Peruvians in the house. that I think knew more things or new things that I didn't know. So we kind of just started sharing and, you know, helped each other learn things about our own background and culture. Nothing could happen across the spectrum of different cultures or different experiences. But yeah, it was just a great place to have. And I think that's why students have fought so hard when we heard that it was going to be torn down. And then that this space was going to open, we're like, whoa, what do you mean? Like, oh, you're going to open a new house, but you're now having a smaller space here. Like, are you really going to open a new house? Like, my Facebook memory thing came up, I think either this week or last week, that was like, we had an event that I kept pushing to have. It's called like the despedida. It's not a goodbye. It's a see you later or whatever. That was the name of it. And then in the caption, me and a bunch of ambassadors, as we were trying to promote it on Facebook, was like, the house is, you know, this is the last event we're going to have at the house because they're going to start construction in the spring. This was 2016 or in 2018. And when I kept scrolling, I see at least four of them. Everybody was under the impression it was going to be built spring 2016 or whatever it was, spring. I don't even remember the timeline of that. Yeah, the event was in the spring. I remember that. And we were expecting the house to be built the next spring to have it ready for the fall for the new incoming students. They literally just did the groundbreaking like this week. I don't even know. Yeah. Right? So like the reason that people fight for the space, the reason that these students have taken time out of their schooling, right? They're pursuing, you know, finding internships and focusing on their last year or their, you know, second to last year, is because this house means so much to all of us. And I don't think anybody would fight this hard for something that's worthless and just for the sake of fighting, you know? As a student myself, like, at one point, you know, you have to realize, you have to kind of like step back and focus on you so that you can help eventually. But these students selflessly decided to not focus on I'm sure that they focused on school and all of that, but like, so to fight for this and to fight administration and to have these conversations with administration and make sure that there's more money being put into this, the construction of this house, and make sure that it's going on time. It's overseen, I think, by a lot of students, because if students weren't pushing for it or pushing to make sure that this was happening, maybe we would have not had an extra $2 billion or however much it was that was increased just last year for this house. Because they would have been like, oh no, it's fine with five. Or it's fine with the two that we originally got. Or five for like both spaces, right? And I'm like, this is not like a buy one, get one, right? This is like an actual construction of a building. Yeah, so I don't think anybody would fight this hard or would literally take time out of their lives to share these stories or to come back to school or to keep up with what's happening if it meant, it literally didn't mean anything, right? We fight for this for a reason, or the slow students fight for it for a reason, and that's it, I think. It just needs to happen. Should happen soon. But, yeah.
Well said. I guess that's good if that's good with you.
Yeah. I think so.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Is there anything you'd want to say to future students who might be using whatever La Casita there is in the... I know that's one of those whatever questions, but...
I don't know. I feel like future students should just... I don't know. It's not a house and it's not La Casita, so... I feel like I need to go see what this place is to see what needs to happen. I just think that students need to go to it. I think students should never stop fighting for, not for a space, but for a space for us, but also just fighting for these issues and to talk about these issues and be comfortable sharing and opening up to each other about these issues or about their lives. And like, I think that's a space that it's for you, right? It's for you or whoever I'm talking to. it's for them, and they should take ownership of that 120%. And don't let nobody tear it down again. Like, right? Because you have to build the love that people had for this house, this old house. You got to build it back up in this new house. It's like a new new, yeah, it's like a new relationship. You got to start it from the ground up and don't let them tear it down again. I guess that's my biggest thing.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.